Great. So, without further ado, this is our 13th. What was it like growing up Armenian? And so I'm going to welcome Martin and Alerica, our two guests for today. And first, would you like to introduce yourselves? Are the mics on? Is there something special you
can do? There we go.
My name is Alerica Hassett. Hello.
My name is Martin Azarian.
Welcome. Thank you. My first question, and I don't know who would like to go first. You can pick.
First.
where were you born, and where else have you lived? And then maybe as you're answering that, you can tell us a little bit about your family, your parents, your brothers, your sisters, etc.
Well, I was born in, like all Rhode Islanders, I was born in Providence, Rhode Island, but I grew up in Warwick, Rhode Island. Warwick is a suburb of Providence. In terms of where I've lived, besides Warwick, I lived for a time in at Hofstra University on Long Island, and then lived in Brooklyn, New York, where I attended law school. Hofstra is where I went to college, where I met my wife, Donna, and then I went to law school. And then after living in Brooklyn for a few years, this was probably at the end of beginning of 1989, then we ultimately moved to Manhattan, lived in Battery Park City. And after leaving Battery Park City in 1993, we ultimately moved and settled to Eden Prairie, Minnesota. So that's where I'm from originally, from Rhode Island, and then lived in New York, again at Hofstra University in Hempstead, Long Island, and then Brooklyn, and then ultimately living in Manhattan. And then subsequent to that, we then moved to Minnesota.
Thank you.
Do I have to use this?
Yeah, good idea.
Okay, I will. I shouldn't ask questions. Okay.
I ask the questions around here.
I think I turned it off.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. I was born in the Twin Cities. I was officially born in St. Paul in a hospital that no longer exists. And then I spent most of my childhood in Northeast Minneapolis, where I lived very close to my extended and immediate family. I lived in a duplex, so my mom, my dad, and my sister and I all lived upstairs. And then my mom's parents lived downstairs. And then my dad's mom, she lived across the alley. So we were all from the city. And at any given point, one of the several cousins that I had on my dad's side would be living with my paternal grandma. So we were all very, very close, and it was fun. So then I was about 16, and at that point my parents had already been divorced. My mom remarried, and we moved to Roseville, and I have been in Roseville since.
So our next question, where in Armenia did your ancestors come from?
Sure. So officially, and this is like stuff that I had to learn from my mom, thankfully, both my great-grandparents were from Dikranagar, which is now Diyarbakir, that no longer exists like an official Armenia now. My great-great-grandparents are on both sides were there, but my grandfather was actually born in Alexandria, Egypt, and then later on, my grandmother and her family, like right around the beginning of the genocide, they moved to Egypt, which is where they met my grandparents. And I think from what I understood, I think we're not entirely sure why, because my great-grandparents moved to Egypt way before the official genocide, and we think it was kind of during the massacres of the late 1800s, they kind of moved there. So my grandfather was actually born in Egypt. But the reason my grandmother ended up in there was, I guess, her father worked for the Sultan, who told her and the family that better get out, there's gonna be trouble. And so they left Armenia and ended up in Egypt, thankfully.
My family, both on my my father's side and my father's mother's side, my grandmother and grandfather on their paternal side, were born in Palu, Bagin, in Armenia. They fled the genocide around 1915. They both, as far as I can tell, my grandmother ultimately escaped the genocide and fled to Lebanon, Beirut, and then ultimately traveled to Marseille, France, and then from there traveled to where she thought she was going to go, which was the United States, but never quite made it to the United States. This would have been after the First World War, around 1922, 1923. My grandmother ultimately settled in Cuba, where there was a large Armenian population, and where she ultimately met my paternal grandfather, Sarkis Azarian. So my grandmother and grandfather both came from the same town, Harlu. They emigrated ostensibly separately, and then ultimately resided, found each other in what is today Havana, Cuba. And then in 1946, my father, having been born, I believe, in 1928, 1929, my father ultimately emigrated to the United States, and then when he did that, settled in Rhode Island, returned to Cuba, ultimately bringing the rest of his family, or our family, or my family, to the United States. So that's the history of my family on my father's side. So ultimately residing in Providence, Rhode Island, and that's ultimately where I was born. But they had fled the genocide in 1915, and ultimately, I don't know how my grandmother did this, because all she spoke was Armenian. She managed to emigrate ultimately to Cuba. Who would have thought there was a large Armenian population in Cuba? It's important to remember that she could not emigrate to the United States in 1922, because at that time, America was not permitting individuals to emigrate from anywhere other than, I think, from Northern Europe. So the plan was ultimately that she would settle in Cuba, and at the first opportunity, she would then move to the United States. She had to wait until the end of the Second World War. My entire family had to wait until the end of the Second World War. But as soon as the war ended in 46, my family began to emigrate to the United States.
So next question. Have you learned anything interesting or unique about that area where your ancestors came from and or your ancestors?
Yes, please.
My grandmother really didn't talk about Palu at all, and she didn't really talk about Armenia that much. It's important to remember that Armenian was her first language. English was a very distant third. She knew some smattering of Spanish, but again, she really didn't talk about Palu much at all. But what I did find growing up in Rhode Island, and even just recently, is there were survivors and children of survivors of the genocide who were from Palu, who settled in Rhode Island, almost, I would imagine, coincidentally, but they settled in Rhode Island. And there are actual photographs of those survivors and the children of the survivors at various points of interest in Rhode Island, and in particular in Narragansett, Rhode Island, which is a seashore community, and there would be reunions from of these individuals who gathered there, if not yearly, certainly more often than within 5 years. So that was something I found that was very, very interesting. But beyond that, my parents and my grandparents really didn't talk very much about Armenia. They talked about the food, they talked about church, they talked about the culture, but they didn't even talk very much. But it's important to remember that, you know, my grandmother was only 8 years old when she left Armenia. So she really didn't have a strong connection other than being born there and then surviving and then leaving. So her stories at best would have been fragmented. Certainly my father has a memory of Armenia because he wasn't born there, he was born in Cuba. So that's somewhat of a fortunate circumstance, part of the genocide. But that's what I remember, just the strong family connection to Armenia, but also the church being there in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. If you know anything about Rhode Island's only the size of Hennepin County. I mean, it's 45 minutes, it's 45 minutes long by north-south and 35 minutes east-west. It's very small. Yeah, it's half the size of Connecticut. So when you have a church as prominent as St. Sahag and Mesrour was and still is in Rhode Island, that really became the focus of the Armenian community, at least from my perspective. So that was sort of our little parlou, that was sort of our little bagin, little Armenia. And it was all that little enclave, shouldn't say little, but there was an enclave of Armenians in Pawtucket around St. Sahag Mesrour. And that was more the focus of Armenian culture and Armenian identity, less with respect to Palu, because again, the ideas of Palu, what Palu was, were never really communicated to me by my grandmother, because again, she was only 8 years old.
A couple of interesting things. First off, my great-grandparents, having come from Dikranagar, it was interesting that they both, you came from the same area in Armenia and then immigrated separately and ended up meeting in Egypt. But one interesting thing about Dikranagar is that it later on, as it became Diyarbakir, the mayor, I think, was trying to rebuild all of the old Armenian churches, which kept getting demolished again, but they were making an effort to kind of rebuild the Armenia, even as it sits now in what is now considered Turkey. The other interesting thing, which is not, I guess, 100% Armenian, but it is kind of, was that my mom and her parents, they all lived in Cairo. That's where she was born. And that's where she met my dad, who's not Armenian. He's very German. And I guess she was working at the American University of Cairo. He was going to school there, working on his Arabic studies. And they met, and I guess they were just friends. And later on, my mom was, at that point, I think my mom and her family were already talking about leaving Egypt because with the ruler, how do you say his name? Nasser. He was kicking out all of the non-Armenians and, the non-Arabs, excuse me. So like the Europeans and I guess Armenians are considered so Christians. And so they're already talking about coming to the United States, mainly following my great uncle, Farhan Kardashian. So I guess my mom was like telling my dad, oh, I'm gonna be going to the United States. He's like, oh, where? And she's like, oh, Minnesota. He's like, well, I'm from St. Paul. And she's like, okay, good. And so long story short, they ended up coming, like meeting up again in Minnesota. And that's kind of history, at least for a while. He passed away 7 years ago. But the other funny thing that I learned is that I guess my mom went to school with Nasser's daughter, and she was always apparently like followed around by the bodyguards. But this is to quote my mom, so Nasser's wife, is a fanaha, which means ugly and dumpy.
So she was.
So that's not an Armenian term, but that is what ugly and dumpy means. So those are some interesting things about the areas that
So next question, and I think you started to allude to this. So was there an Armenian community in the area where you grew up, and did you take part in any Armenian events while you were growing up?
Absolutely there was. You have to remember, again, Rhode Island is very, very small. Like I said, it's about the size of Hennepin County. And in the center of Providence, there is this church. It's called St. Sahag and Mesrour, and it's been there, I think, well, certainly before 1930s, 1920s. It's been there for quite a long time. Maybe been there before the genocide. Not quite sure. It is the hub, the center of Armenian life for Armenians in living in Rhode Island and southeastern Massachusetts. It's topped off by a very large Blue Cross, and I'm told that the pilots coming into TF Green Airport use it as a guide to land their airplanes. But yes, there would be, obviously there was Sunday service. It was done almost entirely in Armenian until maybe a few years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago. It switched over to half English, half Armenian. I would go occasionally. I didn't go very often. There's a whole host of reasons for that. My family wanted me to become an American as quickly as possible, so English was the prominent language spoken in our home. If my parents didn't want the kids to know what was going on, they would either speak in Spanish or in broken Armenian, and that was their way of keeping secrets. The culture was always around the church. There would be festivals, there'd be festivities. You couldn't miss the church. If you were traveling on 95, going north and south from New York to Boston, you couldn't miss that church. It was sort of the 35W. Imagine traveling north on 35W or 35E, and every day you saw this church with the pointed top, and then you would see the blue cross. It just spoke to you. It was always there. Something that I always remembered as a child growing up is there's that blue cross. In terms of culture, again, the church was it. There wasn't an ACOM as we had here. If there was any cultural organization, it was subsumed by the church. The priest spoke for the community. There was an understanding, perhaps tacit, that all Armenian authority was with the church. You have to remember that when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, 60s, 70s and 80s, in Rhode Island, there wasn't an Armenia that we understand today. There was an Armenia, but that was a Soviet Socialist Republic, and none of us, I think, attending St. Zahavi and Mesro, or at least knowing about St. Zahavi and Mesro, acknowledge that as the authority of Armenia. It was the church. The church was the be-all, end-all of being Armenian. And it spoke for us, if not directly, certainly with tacit approval by its parishioners and certainly by Armenians in Rhode Island. So that was the cultural center for Armenians. And then, of course, you had the various families, but that's probably something we could discuss in a few minutes.
So the Armenian community, you guys are it. This is it. No, I'm saying, I mean, the Armenian community in Minnesota is obviously not huge compared to other, I don't know, cities or states. But well before there was our Church of St. Sahag, ACOM was here. It started in 1980. And so we had, obviously, the events like we have now, the picnics, the Festival of Nations is a big one. The dance group started too well before I think I was born or right around the time. But we used to, because there was no church at the time, we used to import a priest. And at that time, it was, well, he is now Archbishop Prajag, but that's when he was Higher Prajag, and he was just a priest. So he would come, and I don't know, it was like every, how often would the masses be? Like every like 6 months or every year or something like that? We would go to this Episcopalian church in South Minneapolis, a beautiful church, and then we would have the Armenian church services there. So unlike other Armenian communities where everything is centered around the Armenian church, stuff here, Armenian events were centered around the cultural group, which is not typical. Usually it's the church that does run things. And so later on the Armenians got the St. Zahag, just like from where it came from, we got St. Zahag. And it's an interesting thing. But yeah, we had the we would have the church services up until like the mid-2000s at another church, and continued with all the ACOM events just as we do now.
Our next question, what schools did you attend, and more importantly, were they Armenian schools?
Yes. What schools did I attend? I did not go to Armenian schools. But I did do some like language training in New York City with LARP and the diocese, which was interesting. I got to hang out with Archbishop Prajag. I think he remembered me. And then there was a lady there, Silva Der Stepanian or something like that. She was a very interesting lady. This program where we're learning a language, it was like in the language immersion thing. There were just a couple of girls and a couple of women that were there. It was interestingly enough, before 9/11, so I got to see the towers right before they went down. But as far as schooling here, I went to Catholic schools. So grade school and high school were both Catholic. My grade school was Immaculate Conception in Columbia Heights. And funny enough, my mom went to a school in Egypt called Immaculate Conception.
Cool.
Interesting connection. And then then my high school was Totino Grace, and then for college I went to the University of Minnesota. So very American.
I did not go to Armenian school. It was Armenian Sunday school. I think it was after service. I went once. Don't think I liked it. I was only a young boy. I you know, what did I know, right? I just went, and it was like, this probably isn't for me. And pretty much the end of it. I went to public grade school. I went to public junior high school. Then I went to public high school in Warwick. And then after I graduated from high school, I went to Hofstra University on Long Island. That's where I met my lovely wife, Donna. And then from there, I went on to Brooklyn Law School in New York City. None of these, except for maybe my elementary school, junior high school, we had maybe five or six Armenian kids, students. But then when I went to Hofstra in New York on Long Island, that pretty much all evaporated. People wanted to know what's an Armenian, where I'm from. And in Brooklyn Law School, it was even worse. I mean, it was just, there were no Armenians, except maybe for myself, and that was it. I didn't attend any Armenian schools. The emphasis was on public school, and then, like I said, learning English, becoming American as quickly as possible, getting a degree, and then getting a postgraduate degree if I wanted to. That was really my history of going to school and getting an education.
So did you grow up speaking Armenian, or did you learn the language at any point? And if so, do you continue to speak?
No. No, it's very simple. No, I did not learn. It's very interesting. It's an interesting question, because every Saturday we would get in the car, my brother, my sister, and then my brother and my sister, we would get in the car and we would drive to my grandmother's home in Providence. And she made the best chicken and pilaf you could imagine. And she would talk to us in Armenian. Didn't understand a word she was saying. And my father would have to translate, and that I would understand. So it was interesting. Saturdays were very interesting in my family. So we would go visit my grandmother, who I love and cherish very much. And then, but that was about it. We didn't speak Armenian at home. Like I said before, if my mother and father wanted something to be discussed and they didn't want the kids to know about it, they'd pick a third language to speak. And it was pretty effective for a while until I took Spanish in high school and I could decipher what they were saying. but that was about it in terms of language.
Yes, we did speak Armenian at home. Actually, it was very complicated. Because, like I explained earlier, I lived with my grandparents, so my mom's parents lived downstairs, and my dad's mom lived across the alley. So I guess my dad was obsessed with languages. He loved languages, and he was studying Arabic, obviously, at the University or the American University in Cairo. So he already knew a bunch of languages. And when he and my mom got married, they decided that they would use this as test subjects. I don't know how other way to explain it. So each parental figure would have a language. So my mom got French. My dad got German. My maternal grandmother and grandfather would have Armenian, and then my dad's mom would do English. And so, like, from the day we were born, that's all we would do is we would speak these particular languages with the particular parental figure or guardian. And it worked. I mean, our brains absorbed languages, and we were fluent. In fact, people used to always complain, this was like in the 80s, used to complain. I know one of my sister's school teachers got mad at my dad once because he was speaking to my sister in German. She's like, can you please speak English? I want to understand. He's like, no, I will not. I'm going to speak to her in German. Nowadays, you wouldn't dare say anything like that. So we had all these languages at home. We would get fined 25 cents at one point for every word of English that we spoke when it was with my dad. So when my sister and I could not speak English with each other. It was 10 cents at first, then went up to 25. we were not allowed to speak English at home, so it was very odd, because Natasha and I wanted, she's not here, she and I wanted to speak English, or if we wanted to talk really fast, because it was obviously a language that was a little bit more comfortable since we spoke it in school. But there was couple quick stories. One funny one was, I guess my dad told me, when my sister was very young before I was born, she was using the bathroom, and my dad went up to her and asked her in German, "Are you done yet?" And she said, "Ayo." So she responded to him in Armenian. And he walked away and said, "Okay." And then he's like, and then she's like, "Dad, I spoke to you in Armenian." He's like, "Oh," because like she was kind of figuring out. We were trying to trick our parents. So that was kind of funny. And the other interesting thing too is that one of my parents didn't want to talk about something in front of us. You used Armenian. My parents used Arabic, so we learned some Arabic words along the way. As far as the Armenian is concerned, my mom and I still try to speak Armenian, even though my grandma and my grandpa are no longer around. I'm completely illiterate. Like, I can't read it. I've tried so many times to read it and write it. I can't do it, but I can speak it, which is completely useless if you decide to go to Armenia and speak Western Armenian. Yeah. I like to compare it to, like, Shakespearean English. Like, if, you know, somebody from Shakespearean English came to the United States and started speaking like that, we'd be like, ugh. But if that's what happened when I went to Armenia. I would try to speak, and they just looked at me like I had 16 eyes. It was, aside from the fact that I looked not Armenian back during my bleached hair days. So that was, like, a really weird experience. But it's okay. I think Western Armenian is the best. It's the right Armenian to be in. So.
Can you recall for us your experiences with Armenian food? Did you grow up eating Armenian food?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Some of the fondest memories that I have with my family, even today with my wife and daughters, but going back to my grandmother and grandfather and my father and my mom, was the food. You couldn't get a better meal. The chicken, the lamb, the pilaf. We would make pahlava the old-fashioned way with butter and walnuts and maybe just a little hint of cinnamon and the rose water, the sugared water, and adding the butter at the very last minute to crisp up the bottom. I mean, you couldn't beat it. It was just phenomenal. And the pilaf, I mean, no expense was spared, no ingredient was spared. Recipe called for a stick of butter, it would be a stick and a quarter of butter, whatever it is. Rhode Island was overwhelmingly, and still is today, overwhelmingly Irish and Italian, with a growing Portuguese population. So, and it is a state that is 80 to 85% Roman Catholic. So, and I remember going to school, elementary, and then junior high, and then high school, and my Catholic friends would go off to catechism, or they'd go off to, you know, church or whatever, some church function, because there was a Roman Catholic church practically on every, not on every block, but certainly within a stone's throw. There's a lot of them. Yeah. We only had one church, right? That was it. Yeah. And so I very much felt like an island. I also felt very special, too, because there was only five or six of us at the schools that I went to. So it gave me a sense of uniqueness, but also a sense of very much being somewhat of an outsider, too. So it was sort of this back and forth, and to this day I still feel the same way about, I have a great deal of respect for the Roman Catholic Church, but I also still cling to, and I clung to then, and still now, to my Armenian roots. And it's very hard to break away from that. But it made me feel somewhat special, but again, somewhat alone too. And it got worse when I went to, the loneliness got even worse when I went off to Hofstra on Long Island, because everyone there is either Jewish or Italian, Roman Catholic. And then it got even worse when I went to Brooklyn Law School, where I think 70% of the students there are Jewish. But interestingly enough, they seem to know quite a bit about the Armenian genocide. Not to the degree that we all know it, but they at least know some of it. But for them, it was, in their world, it's the Holocaust. And everything else is secondary. Well, if you had studied your history, which you're supposed to do, and you're known to do this, you would have learned from 1915, you wouldn't have repeated the same mistakes in 1933 when Hitler took power. So, you know, there's an irony there. That's not to say that when I was at Hofstra, that the students there, Catholic, Irish, whatever, Jewish, didn't know about the Armenian Genocide. It just wasn't something that was taught in New York schools to the same extent that it's taught in the New England schools. And by the way, the New England schools, six New England states, many of their legislatures have passed laws stating that the Armenian Genocide must be taught in those public schools, and it is. So your students, even in the 70s and 80s, who were not Armenian, many of them knew about the Armenian Genocide. So it wasn't like I had to explain to them what an Armenian is, they knew. In New York, it was a very different situation altogether. We only had one church at that St. Bartons, right by the UN, that's it. So being an Armenian with the last name IAN, going to school in New York, was a bit of a culture shock for me, just as much as it was a culture shock people I was coming in contact with. They just had no idea what an Armenian was or is in the Armenian Genocide. So that was my experience growing up in public school in Rhode Island. I imagine if I had gone to college in Boston, or law school in Boston, it would have been a different situation. But that did not, for obvious reasons, didn't take place.
I guess I didn't feel, I never felt rejected or like put down, but I felt weird because, not because of being Armenian, because I had a weird name.
Yeah.
And I spoke five languages and you can't, like it's weird to speak that when you're really young. You know, when I was like, you know, really young, I wanted to be Jenny and spoke English, but I couldn't because that's how I was born. So, and even the incidentally, it's like my name isn't even Armenian; it's German. I'm named after the first Visigothic barbarian to sack Rome. My dad wanted this like barbarian son, and so you know, I got. And this is before sonograms, like before you could tell the gender, and so they're like, we're gonna have a son, and we're gonna name him Alaric, and he's gonna be great and warrior, and then I was a girl, and so they're like, we're gonna add an A. And it's like, and my whole name, like fully pronounced, is Alarica Gajari Name de Gris Hassig. And it's very weird, which I love now. I love the fact that I can speak languages, and I'm so forever grateful to my parents and for continuing that and naming me, because I feel now very special and unique. But then you compare it to my sister, was Natasha Maria Hassett. Like, she got the normal name, and then I got the weird one. I think one parent got to name one sister, and the other parent got to name the other one, and it's like, But it's okay. But I think, I definitely feel like I probably identify more as an Armenian, even though I am also German. Even though we did keep up, we would go to German summer school and whatnot. I do feel like I identify a little bit more as an Armenian. It's now it's like a lot different now as like an adult. Even as a young adult, you kind of realize that it's kind of cool. You know, now people are like, "Ooh, you're Armenian." Whereas back when I was a kid, I was like, "What's Armenia?" You know, and it's like, "Oh God." You know, so you know, you have to explain, "Well, where is Armenia?" And you have to try to explain it on the map. But yeah, it's good. I like it. I'm totally fine being Armenian. I can handle it.
There is one thing I wanted, which was. When people would ask, what's Armenian, and what is that? I don't know if you do this, but I say this with a great deal of pride that we were the first Christians, and that I think we're the only country, nation, whatever term you want to use, that had two of Jesus' apostles travel through. So that may not be historically accurate, but that's what I've been taught. I'm sure one other apostle visited Greece on the way to Rome besides Paul, but I don't know that for certain. But I know historically speaking, at least we've got two that showed up in Armenia, so we have that claim. And then, of course, like you said, we've been hinting at it, is that we were the first Christians, which I always like to say to people when they ask, well, where is Armenia and what are Armenians? So I make that a very important point as well. To your question, your point, do you feel special? Do you not feel special? Yeah, I think that's something that I think a lot of Armenians, including myself, cling to. We don't want to give that up.
So in terms of being Armenian, is there a specific event, incident, conversation, or people who especially stand out in your memory?
Donna's grandma, who I adored very much, we were just starting to date, and this was must have been, what, 1983, and I had taken the train out driven out to Donna's home in West Iceland, Long Island, and from the central part of Long Island. And we were sitting down at the kitchen table. It was a beautiful Saturday morning. We were just sitting down having a lovely lunch. And my grandmother-in-law, Donna's grandma, I mean, she was in the room, and she was a presence to be dealt with. There's no question about that. But she was very nice. She was always very sweet to me, always very kind to me. There's no doubt about that. We had a very special relationship. But in the beginning, she sat down with me, and she's eating something. And I'm having lunch, and she goes, in a sort of a thick Brooklyn sort of Italian accent, not that thick, but she asked me, so do your people celebrate Christmas? And I looked at her and I said, Grandma, I said, yes, we celebrate Christmas, we're the first Christians. and she looked at me and she smiled, and I think what she said was, it's good. And I think that was pretty much the end of it about that. And that was pretty much it. But she was the innocence of the question was beautiful. And it gave me a chance to talk about Armenia and do it in a way that said to convey to her we were the first even before Rome became Christian. So and that's something that I always talk about. I always mention that. Last week. What's Armenians? What do you do?
I guess probably one of the more specific conversations I had with somebody was, first of all, there were two priests actually that came to the St. Sahak Church before we actually had an in-house priest. One was Der Sahak. I don't know if any of you remember. He was really cool. I liked him a lot. He was actually one of the few priests that I felt really got the youth community together.
Yeah.
He liked the dwarves, which was kind of cool. No Armenian priest likes the dwarves. He also was not born in Armenia, so we'll go figure. The other one that I really liked was Derya Praman. He's actually the priest, I don't know if he is no longer, if he is still there over in Racine. The Armenia, is it St. Mesro? What church is it?
He retired.
Well, it was Mesro. So as the Armenian dance group, we would go perform at the Racine Festival, and so we got to know him quite well. And at one point, I was doing a ballet intensive in Milwaukee for a summer, and I went and visited his family while we were there. And the reason why this conversation is interesting is because it really points out how very black and white Armenians can be. And I am not trying to like judge anybody or make anybody feel bad who is Armenian, but I'll get to the point in a second. So we were having dinner at his place, and I was going to the U, and Derya Prem asked me, he's like, oh, so what are you studying at the U? I was like, oh, I'm an art major. And he's like, what does your mom think about that? And I was like, whoa! And I actually said, I was like, she's actually very supportive. And I think the reason this conversation stuck out to me is because as Armenians, like, I don't know what it is, but you don't become an artist. You don't. You're either a doctor, or maybe a lawyer. But you are not an artist. Nothing, like I said, no offense to anybody, but you're like expected to be something that makes money. You're expected to marry an Armenian. And at one point, like, and I think what was great about my mom, like raising us, was that she really kept our Armenian identity, but still let us assimilate into culture. Like, I mean, I know she guys didn't get mad if I say this, but I told her one day, I was like, Mom, I'm sorry, I'm not gonna marry an Armenian. She's like, well, I never married an Armenian. I was like, my husband's not Armenian. But it's just a very, it's very interesting how westernized my mom has been, even though she's like probably the most Armenian person. And boy, I'm not trying to like say anything to you or anybody, so I'm not trying to like poke and make any offense to anyone. But we were, my sister and I were allowed to do what we wanted to do within reason. We had our limitations, we, you know, certain things we couldn't do, which were appropriate, but we were allowed to follow what we want to do. In fact, my mom was like, just get your degree and get out of school. I'm sick of paying for you. You know, like, she let me do what I wanted to do and let me be who I wanted to be, which I think is really important. And it's not traditionally Armenian. I mean, I should have like 6 kids by now. You know, I should. I don't know. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm digging my grave deeper. I think I should stop talking right now.
Just keep talking.
Thank you, Mom.
This is not the position of Armenian cultural organization.
Sorry, Mom. Sorry, Mom. Okay, good. That makes me feel better. Thank you.
Fine art. So she's fine.
Oh, yeah. Does she?
She has a job. Yeah, she can work.
I studied French too, by the way, so it wasn't a complete failure in college. So I did study French, I did study art, and then I do nothing. Oh, no, I interpret in French. And then, this is like, I'm sure Daria Pervinky knows about this. Like, I'm also a professional ballet dancer, so go figure on that, you know? I am bringing in the money. Yeah. But it's like, again, that also speaks to how very understanding my mom is, you know, to us. As long as we can, like, support ourselves and do what we can, and, you know, she doesn't have to worry, which she does, it's okay. Yeah, so thank you, Mom. And thanks for making this butter and jelly sandwiches.
That's being Armenian mother. You worry all the time.
Okay, that is very Armenian. That is very, very Armenian. She calls a lot. She worries. She, it's okay. It's alright. It's good. I like it.
Okay, I'm gonna stop talking about Armenian stuff. Making generalized comments on everything.
That's okay, don't worry about it.
You can make fun of me.
No, I would know. I know, not at all. No, like our daughter was an arts major. She was a bachelor, of fine arts from Northeast New York. Okay. She had a job before she even graduated.
That's awesome.
I know.
So, to the audience members, do you all have any questions for our panelists? So,
in Providence, in Rhode Island, you mentioned that the church was the center of the culture. Were there also Armenian-owned businesses and restaurants? Or,
I don't recall growing up. I don't recall any Armenian restaurants. There probably were several stores, but if they were around, I don't recall my father ever going to any of them, or my parents going to any of them. Now there are. Now there are some stores that sell Middle Eastern food, and in particular Armenian food. But I think back in the 60s and 70s and early 80s, it was just, you know, the families were just starting to get off the ground, so to speak. They were the first generation Armenian. So what did they do? They went to the local supermarket, they bought what they could, and they made their own food. And by the way, it was very good. So at least in my family, it was very, very good. But no, the church was pretty much it. That was the Sunday service, and then the festivals. That was pretty much it.
Other questions?
I just wanted to mention what Martin didn't really expound upon, too. When his grandmother came over from Armenia, she was 8 years old, and she was the only survivor in her family. She saw her whole family get massacred in front of her. So she basically was on her own in the world. And when she went to Cuba, her Armenian food had a Cuban flair to it.
Yeah, they would add. So I grew up in a home where there was, we had Armenian food. Then we would have Cuban food, which is very good, by the way. Now, I'm very much a traditionalist. Sorry. Very much a traditionalist. I don't like mixing the two. So, one of the major staples of Cuban cooking is black beans, which I enjoy. But if you put that on pilaf, oh my gosh, it would be like a revolution in my home. You just couldn't do that. So we had a rule, you don't mix the two. One, that's it. But yeah, she would cook with a bit of a Cuban flair. Who knew that there was an Armenian enclave holed up in Havana, right?
Yeah.
So they went from Turkey. You know, they could have stayed in Marseille in France. God knows what would have happened to them there. And so they tried to come to the United States, and then look where they end up, living under the Batista regime. Yeah.
and then fleeing again when Castro takes over. So, you know, our daughter, our oldest daughter, went to Italy a few years ago, and I said, congratulations, Alexa, you're the first Azerian to return, not at the wrong end of a gun, right? The wrong end of a bayonet was a term I used. I said, you're the first Azerian to leave a country voluntarily and then return voluntarily. Because my family's been kicked out of every country that I've been, right?
And that's the same thing with my family, too. Obviously, my great-grandparents left Kanagar. They ended up in Cairo, Egypt. But then during the Nasser regime, where basically all non-Arabs were getting kicked out, so Christians, non-Muslims, then they ended up dispersing everywhere. So we have family basically all over the world. We ended up in, obviously, Minnesota. But it's like, yeah. I mean, it's kind of sad to think that, you know, we can't find one place where we're not going to get, like, and it's not like we're bad people. I mean, we're Christians, we're normal people, we're nice, we're respectful, but it's just unfortunate.
Yeah.
Any questions?
No?
Great. Well, let's give a round of applause. See you on the 18th of April at the History Center. So it's called the History Center. Yes. Oh, please. We're Armenian. Eat.
Thanks, guys, for coming.
Thank you for coming.